What will the president have to show for his trip to Saudi Arabia? From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. President Biden is back at the White House this morning after a visit to Saudi Arabia on Friday. It was a politically risky trip. Biden has tried to isolate Saudi Arabia's royal family for human rights abuses, but the country's a major oil producer. Right now, the world needs more oil to bring down energy prices. So what did the president get out of this trip? Marketplace's Nova Sappho is here with more on that. Hi, Nova.
Good morning, Sabri.
So, you know, one of the enduring images out of this to come out of this trip is that of Biden fist bumping Saudi Arabia's crown prince. But were there any firm commitments to actually pump more oil?
Well, none publicly. And that was the danger of this trip, mending ties with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who's blamed for the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, and yet not getting anything concrete in return. Now, a senior advisor who was on the trip with the president, Amos Hochstein, told CBS that the administration is confident more oil will hit the market in the coming weeks.
There is additional spare capacity. There is room for increased production. As we've told producers in the United States, we've had conversations over the last several months and weeks with OPEC, and I believe that there is still more room to see additional steps.
You know, we have seen gas prices actually come down in recent weeks, almost 50 cents from their peak. So if that's the case, why this urgency to get more oil on the market, you know, if we are already past the worst of it, maybe?
Yeah, well, because oil demand could ramp back up later this year if, you know, the economies pick up around the world. We don't know what Russia is going to do, so there are supply concerns as well. And energy prices are a huge driver of inflation. We know energy prices rose the most in June, along with food prices. And when energy prices are high, that can affect many other parts of the economy, Sabri.
All right, Marketplace's Nova Sappho, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Tens of thousands of people have been evacuated from areas of Spain, France, and Portugal as wildfires spread there. In Spain alone, there were 30 active wildfires. The BBC's Bethany Bell reports from the south of the country.
Where I am in Malaga last night, the authorities managed to bring fires that were burning in the hills around the town under control, and around 3,000 people who had been evacuated from their homes are beginning to return. Spain is used to wildfires, but this year they've had two heat waves in quick succession. And what we've been hearing from firefighters is that they say that climate change is making their job that much harder. They have people who are specialized in fighting fires, but they need more aircraft, helicopters, planes that can drop water and fire retardant substances. And this, of course, is something that will need more investment.
That was Bethany Bell with her editorial partner at the BBC. Initially, after June inflation numbers came in hot at 9.1%, the Federal Reserve looked like it would have to hike interest rates by a full percentage point later this month. It's now looking like the Fed may settle for a smaller 0.75 percentage point rate increase. Markets look like they're responding well to that. Let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 1.2%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are also all up in the 0.9 to 1.2% range, with the Dow future up 280 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.960%. As we mentioned, that was the level of inflation year over year in June, a fresh 40-year high. Wages have not kept up with inflation. So effectively, most of us make less money now than we did a year ago. And that has special implications for the federal minimum wage. According to a new report from the Economic Policy Institute, the value of the federal minimum wage has reached a historic low. Marketplace's Savannah Marr reports.
The federal minimum wage hasn't budged since 2009, when Congress raised it from $6.55 to $7.25 an hour. And as the cost of food, gas, and housing goes up, the purchasing power of that wage diminishes.
In terms of its real value, the minimum wage has not been this low since 1956.
Sebastian Martinez-Hickey is an author on that report from the Economic Policy Institute.
It's a very stark statistic, and it's a consequence of Congress's unprecedented level of inaction when it comes to increasing the minimum wage.
He says last July marked the longest period of time without an increase since Congress established the minimum wage in the 1930s. But the number of Americans actually making that federal minimum is shrinking, says Michael Strain with the American Enterprise Institute.
We've seen a narrowing of wage inequality.
30 states and dozens of municipalities have raised local minimums as high as $15 an hour, and the pandemic labor shortage forced parts of the private sector to boost wages even higher on their own, just to attract and retain enough workers. Strain says workers in some of the lowest wage industries have seen the most significant gains.
For example, in the leisure and hospitality industry, we've seen months where wages have been growing at a 10, 11, 12, 13% annual rate.
But Janice Fine, a professor of labor studies at Rutgers, says those gains aren't evenly distributed.
We've got huge divisions by region.
She says the $7.25 federal minimum is keeping workers in parts of the Southeast and Mid and Mountain West in poverty.
With the labor shortage, workers have had a lot more leverage. There's no question about it. But if you really want it to be there across the labor market for all workers, you're really talking about policy.
Right now, Fine says it's not clear there's political momentum for Congress to break its 12-year streak and give the minimum wage a boost. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.